This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Coulter, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. With me, the High Performance Coach for the Country Men, Nathan Cooper-Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Good to see you, Robbie.
High Performance Coach for the Metro Men, Darren Best. Welcome, Bestie.
Thank you.
It's good to have you both in. Sunderland's still flying, Coops.
Mate, the game, I tell you, coming back from 1-0 down, 2-1 up against Luton Town, going into the second leg, I'm up and about.
We won't mention Arsenal. And we'll move straight on from there. As we mentioned on the pod, you can now follow the Talking Split socials on Twitter and Instagram with the Talking Split handle. It has been National Volunteer Week this week. So as we mentioned a little while ago, if you have any coaches you'd like to give a shout out to and acknowledge the work that they put in for all the players and all the other coaches out there, we are more than happy to shout them out on the podcast. So if you want to send that through via the DMs or via audio, you're more than welcome to do that. I will start this off this week with the first shout out on in this round, I suppose, that we'll go with, which is the Duckworth family from Knox Basketball. So for those of you that may or may not be aware, Simon Duckworth has been around forever coaching on Friday nights. He frequently coaches domestic teams in there as well. He coaches teams that don't involve his kids. He just coaches anyone and everyone. His wife, Megan, is the team manager for like the under-12 boys team that his son plays in. His daughter coaches in the Aussie Hoops program. Simon jumps in, does like court announcing for Big V, does the commentary for the Knox Basketball and NBL 1. I know throughout trials was on court with every age group, didn't care, jumped in, even though he wasn't even coaching in some of them, he just jumped in, would help run trials, would help run selections for people, just jumped in. Anytime there's a coach missing on a Friday night or can't take a training session, always puts his hand up, always takes them. We would be lost without people like him at association level. So big shout out to the Duckworths in general, but Simon overall for the amount of work he puts in as a volunteer, because he does it literally for love of the game. And you talk to him, genuinely loves it, very good at what he does in that coaching space, but just loves it because that's his community. And it obviously treated him really well as he was coming through as a player and a coach, and now seeing his kids go through it as well. I think it's a fantastic thing for Knox Basketball, but for the Duckworths in general to give back as much as they do in that that volunteer space. So we are talking communication and feedback today. Now, the last time I had you two on the pod, we got to the end of it and said there could probably be a part two for the Director of Coaching podcast. The time before that, we were doing senior basketball, and that was part two of senior coaching basketball, and we said there could be a part three. So there's a reasonable chance this could be the first in a 15-part series on feedback and communication on the podcast, but it is a vital part of what we do as coaches. It is, you know, we talk to players, coaches, officials, admin, parents, like the whole box and dice comes in that coaching space. And while we all sort of sit there and think, oh, you know, coaching is real easy, you just jump on court and try and teach someone how to make a layup and things like that, there's so much more that goes into it. So what we are looking at today is just how it can be done better, because I think it's probably like after your knowledge of what to teach, communication is really the next part of it, I think, coming through. Like, Bestie, what do you think could look or good feedback would look like in a coaching space?
Well, I think the first thing is it's different for every level, different for every age group, and definitely different for different genders as well. I think what good feedback looks like is whether it's received or not. You know, so if it's not getting through to the athlete, then it's obviously not good feedback.
So who's at fault there? Would that be the player or the coach?
Well, it could be a combination. You know, I think I had an example just most recently, actually, through a phone call last night driving home from a session around a particular athlete that has some, I guess, challenges. And once I knew that, it really changed the way I approach that athlete, and it's been really positive since then. So I think part of that's on me, part of that's on the athlete and the parent. So I think everyone plays a part in effective communication. And a big part is listening to understand, not listening to respond.
It's like you've read my notes in here, because I do have that written down as well.
I do.
Yeah. No, but you're bang on the money, because I do think that a lot of the times when we're giving feedback and we ask someone to give us a response to a question that we've potentially asked, we already know what the answer might be, and we're just like, okay, can you stop talking so I can now talk again? It's that kind of thing. What about you, Coos? What have you seen, or what is the gold standard, I suppose, in your opinion, on what feedback and communication should really look like from a coach?
Yeah, genuine listening. You know, listening to care, listening to understand knowledge of the athletes, knowledge of the situation. So I'm kind of, you know, just regurgitating a little bit of what Bestie said. But I think when you start the feedback process with the right goal in mind and you've done the work prior, then that's what it's – then it's kind of setting out the way that it should. You know, flipping it to like the athlete side, you know, knowing that, you know, coaches, you know, want to give feedback, that coaches like players that are engaged. So how many times do we see athletes coming up saying, hey, have you got any feedback for me? You know, or I want some feedback. But knowing that they're not taking any of that on board. They haven't come with a pen and paper. They haven't come with a plan. So I think the gold standard is, you know, is exactly what Bestie was talking about. Who are they? Who are you? What's the scenario? What are we trying to get out of it? And if we've got those things down, then we can really get to work.
And I think honesty, sorry, Rob.
No, you know,
right after our session last night, in our post-session, to be honest, largely that session we worked on the offensive side of the ball for the posts. And one of the athletes came to me and said, oh, Darren, you know, I didn't think my defense was great that session. Have you got some feedback for me? And I said, I don't, because I wasn't focused on it. And if I was to give you anything, I'd just be making something up.
Yeah. It's token.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you could have been lower in stance and yeah, that sort of stuff.
And then we immediately turned it into a question. Well, why do you think it wasn't good? You know, like, let's unpack some of that. But honestly, I wasn't focusing on it because it was an offensive-based, you know, session in that moment. And that was well-received. It was like, oh, fair enough.
So some just commentary from me listening in on that is, again, thinking about, you know, where's the athlete's mindset about who are they? What are they trying to work on? What's this part of practice? Did they come to practice with a specific controllable and positive goal in mind? Have they got their journal? Did they think about it and actually try and get to Bestie prior to the segment in practice and say, hey, I've been really focused in on my post defense lately. I've been watching a lot of, you know, NBA or whatever it may be that they're interested in. Could you please just keep an extra eye on me in this? And then maybe we can discuss it afterwards. And so again, there's that level of, okay, well, what is the feedback? You know, what am I going to do with it? And do I really care what it is?
And I think that's half the problem too, is usually only after a negative experience does the request for feedback come. Like it's when something goes wrong, they've missed a team selection or they've missed something like that. It's, oh, can I grab some feedback? It's like, okay, do you want feedback or do you just want to be made to feel good about why you've potentially missed out on something? Understandable on both sides of it, so there's no issue with that. But how many times at the end of a session has there been multiple little drips of feedback go in during that session that just gets forgotten about at the end of it?
Constantly.
Yeah.
It's what coaching is. Like you don't sit there mute on the sidelines. I've seen both of you coach and I know you are into it. There is constant direction being given. That is your feedback. Like if you're being told that as a player, you need to take care of that. And I know it's something that like Country have done for years with the academy stuff in particular. They have their journals that they have to fill out and you go through what did you learn at today's session. And other than the handwriting just being disgusting from under 14 athletes, which I suppose we can't completely change. And to be fair, shot fired, which probably shouldn't be someone that's firing that shot. It's really interesting to see what have they picked up on. Like it's one kid came up last week, free throws. It's like, you cannot tell me that, yes, we worked on free throws and that's what you learnt during this session. What were the teaching points within it? Like try and unpack a little bit of that rather than just the generic sort of comment, I feel like. Does it change if a parent or a player is asking you for feedback?
Yeah, it does. Obviously, because there's a different level of understanding that we're obviously conscious of when we're having those conversations. Something that I'm trying to work with the athletes more on that probably frames the conversation with the parents is what does the plan look like? So, yeah, look, I'm going to give you this feedback, but then before we break away from this conversation, I want to know what you're going to do with it. You know, what does it look like? And so that's definitely something I know I'm trying to do a little bit more. But, yeah, it's just that conscious understanding of, you know, how much can a parent digest compared to an athlete? You know, what level of language am I using? you know, can I be potentially a little bit more blunt with the parent if I know that that's the kind of person they are and that's what they're looking for? So again, it just goes back into that understanding of who, what, when, where, and why.
When do they have basketball knowledge?
Yeah, great.
Like when,
yeah.
when you're talking to the parent, it's like, what are you doing? Are you dealing with an ex-sports person that maybe hasn't played basketball but has a fairly decent knowledge of skill acquisition, decision-making, those types of things? Or are you dealing with someone that's like, hey, I'm just pretty happy my kid plays. And can you give me more on that? Like, I know, I think it was Bestie, you've spoken about it a little bit before about like IPPs for athletes and just having something where they can get a little bit of a gauge to where they're at. I saw one of the soccer academies over in England doing it. They did an IPP for all of their players that were in their academy. And I think it was an under 14 academy from memory. And those of you that have played FIFA and the like, you know that you get like the little player cards where it's got like the image and it gives them like a numerical rating out of like pace, shooting, dribbling and those types of things. So the feedback they gave their players as to where they were at the time was effectively a FIFA card. And it was the player's head on it with some ratings as to where it was good, where it was bad, gold or silver, depending, or bronze, depending on how good or bad they were in various things. But it was a really interesting way of seeing feedback, being able to deliver a message to a player in that space. And the numerical thing is a little difficult, to be fair. Like, how do you distinguish between like 74 and 72 on a rating scale? Like, you're splitting hairs, I feel. But it was just a way of getting the players to understand where they were at and some areas that they potentially need to improve in moving forward. And just the delivery of that, when you talk about feedback, I think a lot of it does tend to be verbal. It's that communication style where you're talking to someone. But sometimes the written stuff I feel like can be just as valuable because it's something they can take away, digest in their own time, and then come back and ask questions about. Like I think that might be something that's probably a little bit lost. Do you guys still do IPPs just for your MPP?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you still do?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And super valuable. I think with the feedback requests on the Metro side of things, we only provide feedback for certain camps, not for all camps. You know, for example, we were talking about our under 12 skills days today. You know, there was nearly 400 kids coming through. So it's just, you know, if parents want meaningful feedback, their camp costs are going to triple because we'll need to have a coach there, you know, per basket taking notes, let alone just trying to get them organized. But for the camps and selections that we do provide feedback for in Metro, once again, we know it's a little bit different to country, but we say that the request can't come from the parents. It actually needs to come from their director of coaching. And that is so that there is a level of understanding around, first of all, what we're saying, but piggybacking onto what Coop said was, I always tell our kids, if you want feedback, and this is a camp that you're able to receive feedback for, this is the process. You need to go and request it from your DOC. The reason why is, one, they can understand it. Two, they can then help you address it because that's their job. If you made our program, we would be helping you go to the next level. So that's why we have that process in place. Seems to work fairly well.
It's just from a consistency perspective, I feel like it's if the DOC knows you're working on someone's shot, for argument's sake, like they're just not getting under the ball before they get up into their release point, at least that feedback is going through and it's something that their club coach can work on as well. So there's a level of consistency there that just takes out any ambiguity because we know some of these kids potentially have up to four or five coaches by the time you add in their domestic coach, their rep coach, their SDP coach, their school coach, and then potentially a trainer, God forbid, if they have that on the side as well. That's a lot of feedback coming through various channels that may be construed differently depending on how they take that on board. So I think the written stuff just takes a lot of that out of it, but being filtered through another lens can really help the athletes along the way. How do you go about establishing a trusting enough relationship with a player that you can give hard feedback? Because not all feedback is going to be good, and usually, like I said, it comes from a negative perspective and that something's gone wrong, which is where we as coaches like to intervene because we are the solver of all the world's problems as coaches in our own minds, but sometimes you have to deliver some feedback that's not going to be well received. How would you go about getting that relationship where you can deliver that?
The first thing I do, which actually probably is a step back, is if a player, so let's say it's an MPP environment. If a player does come up and approach me and says, hey, do you have any feedback or what do you think I should be working on? My immediate question is, well, what do you think? And of course, like some people think that that's a cop-out, but that is a deliberate question designed to force them to be able to self-analyze, make sure that they've come with a mindset of I want the feedback, I want to have this discussion, I want to get better using this information. And it's an important part of developing self-awareness, knowing that we, you know, you have to have, you know, elite self-awareness to be an elite person, elite athlete. So I always start there. Well, what do you think? And we go through that discussion, and usually they're pretty good. You know, they've identified the things that I would, and maybe I need to layer on something, or I might have seen something that I would add to it, but that's a pretty good start.
Where do you go if they're just wildly off the mark? And like, you may sit there and think, no, this kid's not a great defender. Like, I mean, look, I think I'm a really good defender. Like, how do you approach that when they're just so far away from where you think they're at?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's providing or trying to lead through examples. So let's say that they think they've done a really good job. Let's say 1v1 defense. Interesting. I didn't see that today. Can you provide me some examples? So then now we're already usually in some sort of gray area. And if they start saying, oh, yeah, but I did this, and I'd say, well, you know, and then be like, oh, okay, but, you know, do you remember that time, you know, that possession in the second segment where, you know, you got blown by because, you know, you didn't pop back on your closeout, you know, and then usually we're back into a place where it's, oh, yeah, and starting to maybe just shift their mindset back to like, oh, yeah, maybe I didn't have probably the session that I did. So, yeah, just trying to provide examples. If it does obviously get to the kind of nth degree of that conversation where we're talking about the player really, really is kind of a little bit off with the fairies and their understanding, film is an amazing teacher. And obviously we don't always have access to film. But I would say to coaches that are maybe dealing with this that, okay, you're having this conversation. It's becoming quite regular. You're seeing one thing. They think they're seeing the other. Got to get film on the session. Got to get some extra eyes out there, you know, and use the visual tool to help make the point. And when we talk about making the point, it's about helping the athlete.
Yep, which is not it. Like, Bestie, you've been in that film space a fair bit as well. Do you find it to be more beneficial from a team perspective or from an individual perspective?
Awesome question. I just wanted to go back a little bit to the gaining trust thing. If you come to one of my sessions, you'll see I own my mistakes and I'll drop down and do a burpee or I'll join in the whatever it is.
Better man than me, Bestie.
Right? I do all the time, right? And it
really does.
Yeah. and to be honest, it's just like I'm not perfect. Like, and now I'm telling you, you've made a mistake, so you better take it as well. So, that helps build trust. With film, depending on the group, so if I'm doing a state team, I would never say this, but for example, with my youth league team, I often start with, you know, I'm just trying to find examples here. I'm not necessarily picking on any one individual. If you happen to be in four clips in a row.
Oh, I feel like this is a very recent example that you're giving us.
Carry a hand. We told you he was a shooter. No, no. You know, so to try and diffuse some of it that way. But I'll often, if it's going that way, and I know it's bad, and if that individual is somewhat sensitive to that, I'll hit him up beforehand.
Yep.
I'll send him the film or I'll hit him before we go in the room and say, hey, just so you know, this is coming. And I'm well aware of coaches doing it with senior players at times just to show the rest of the group that they're not above it.
Yep.
You know, like you're not above criticism.
Yep. If you're going to hold your 10th player accountable, you have to hold your number one player accountable. Correct. In that sort of space. Yeah. It's an interesting one. How long would you do? Because there are really two types of film, I suppose. So there's the review stuff of what has happened. And then like the scout stuff of what is going to happen in that space. Leaving the scout stuff to one side, how long would you spend on a review after a game, Bestie?
Oh, so what I'm doing in my youth league for now, it works out to be about 15 minutes.
Yep.
But the film is somewhere between 3 and 4 because we generate discussion and stuff like that. Yeah.
You any different, Coops?
In terms of the review film of like how much we would show?
Yep.
Yeah, it'd be anywhere between 3 to 5 clips, knowing that each clip usually works out to be about a 5-minute discussion. But just kind of going back to what you were talking about earlier, and Bessie and I have been trying to experiment with this as much as possible that, with our Navy team, is really trying to shift the focus and the energy spent on film from team review to individual clips. So spending more time creating individual clips, you know, sending that to the athlete through WhatsApp, if time permitting, sit with them individually and have a chance to work more closely with the athletes individually, because that's where I believe that the film can be the best teacher. And then obviously the team stuff, you know, on top of that.
Yeah, but I mean, I like what you're talking about there, Bestie. Like, you're giving the preemptive strike almost of, hey, this may not be your favorite film session coming through because you do appear in a few of these. It's a difficult one because everyone will deal with that just a little bit differently. There are some people that are almost immune to it and it's like, oh yeah, I screwed that up, whatever. And they go through it. But others take it really personally, like that I've seen. And I've certainly done it the wrong way at times where I've maybe put like text on the screen, which can then be taken out of context. So it might be like, Coops needed to rotate earlier. It's like, well, I've given no context around that. So the player gets called out in front of the other 9 teammates as they're going through it.
Yeah, I think some explanation around what you're, you know, for those of us that use sports code, you know, I'll have a label that's good and then a label that's RFI. I used to say bad and it was in a red colour and I was told that was a little little bit too much. A
little gif of Bestie would swap up with just like an angry face.
Yeah, well. Yeah. But, you know, I think explaining those things before the session and then once you've got a history of it and maybe you're in the season, maybe you don't need to do it as much. But, you know, for us older folks, and I hate to say that because I'm not that old, but some of my college film sessions were like an hour in review and the technology wasn't as great. So sometimes it was fast forward, rewind, you know, all of that. That is brutal.
Yeah, it's just too much. Like, it, and think about the kids we coach at the moment. They would spend the vast majority of their time when they're not with us and doing stuff that actually matters on social media, which would be Snapchat and TikTok. The attention span is somewhere between 6 to 15 seconds. Like before it's a swipe next, swipe next, swipe next.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's kind of what your film sessions turn into. It has to be those quick little bites rather than a full-on dissection of why the second line of defense didn't rotate when dribble penetration occurred from the corner. Like it's going to be too much for them.
Yeah, so often I'll clip mine. So, for example, I've done mine from the weekend and I'll put it in the group chat so they can look at it. And then when we first walk into the room before practice tonight, we'll say, who's looked at it? Most of them put their hand up. From time to time, I'll put something in there that's, you know, should generate test. Some sort of reaction from someone so then you'll know. And then, you know, hopefully that gets that process going.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense. So,
well, we've also used some more turn and talk as well, trying to break up the film of, and I had this, like even with 15-minute film sessions, you know, got player feedback where, you know, dark room, pre-practice, you know, it was too, not deflating, it was just too quiet and so on. So adding some more turn and talk, adding some more player assessment, was really valuable in breaking that up, but engaging them and having them be more a part of the session as well. And then I think the other part too, just kind of connecting back to, you know, what we were talking about in the relationship building part is, you know, are you spending the time away from those sessions either reinforcing the good behavior and actively, you know, letting the athletes know that you care about them. Like I, you know, I try to, you know, get a text or whatever, a WhatsApp group, whatever it may be, you know, where I'm following up and, you know, letting that athlete know, you know, did they do a good job or that I'm here for them or, you know, touching back on something maybe that we've shared before. Hey, how's mum and dad? Whatever it may be. And then if we're on the floor and, you know, we just hit them 3 times and not carrying a hand and then they actually do carry a hand, well, don't let that go through to the keeper. Like make sure that they get the positive reinforcement in front of the group that they've actually made change from the feedback that was provided, and that'll go a long way.
Yeah, and I think that's a really valuable part of it. It's is just building that, because you don't want to be friends with your players, like, and you probably deal with it a little bit more, Bestie, because one, you're not that old, and two, you're coaching youth league, so they're in an age where you can probably have different conversations with them than say a random under 14s team. You don't want to fall into that trap of being their friend where you, like, you've got to have trust and respect between the two, but you're not there to be friends with them. And I find that's a mistake that a lot of coaches do fall into especially early on in their coaching, is like, hey, how cool is this? I've got a whole new group of friends. It's like, no, you're not their friends. Like, you're their coach. Coach them. Like, that's not your job.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Like, I agree with what you're saying. I think friends, it's probably more important just to be respected. You know, I don't know if you'd be friends with someone that you don't respect.
I know people can't see this, but Bestie is pondering. Like, he's like a thinker. Like, he's deep in thought here.
Yeah, because, you know, at the end of the day, when the time comes, you know, are you going to fall into line if you're friends with your coach? You know, or are you going to be defiant? And I think about when I was playing youth league with Nick Avasevich. He was pretty young at the time. Awesome coach. We've become really good friends since then, but it was never in doubt that he was the authority because of how he carried himself. But I would still say at that time we were friends.
Yep. It's a blurred line. I completely agree. Because like having worked with Nick before, like, and Nick probably the best head coach I've been fortunate enough to work with in that state program in particular. He was fantastic for me in my development, but also did a great job with the kids. His ability to go from I'm in charge and I am the coach here to, hey, now I can have a bit of a joke with you about something to reinforce a teaching point, second to none. Yeah. Like, and same sort of deal. Like, you could walk in the gym and it's like, that is the head coach. There was no doubt as to who that was. But the kids, I don't feel like ever felt attacked by very direct coaching either. And that might have had something to do with the fact that they might have been used to him or he built that rapport and relationship and trust with them. But like from that end, he was probably about as good as I've ever seen. Like he was phenomenal in that space. So it is an interesting one. Like I know now I've tried to do a better job, and this is a little bit of a sidetrack, but I've tried to do a better job of staying connected with kids I've coached over the years. Like I 100% dropped the ball on this one for a lot of years, where it's just like, yeah, I coached you, that's cool. But you know, once we're done with the season, I might see you down the shops, but that's kind of it. And obviously an athlete we coached in a state team last year before, I think it was, Coops, passed away. You know, it was one of those ones where it's like, geez, should we have really stayed connected a little better on that sort of thing? And again, it's not to be friends with them, but it's at least to be a sounding board for people if they need, or to at least know that they can go to you if they need to go to. So every now and again, like players that I have coached over the years will get a random text message with, hey, remember when you missed that dunk against so-and-so? And that will start a conversation, which you can sort of elaborate on a little bit more, but I probably tend to be closer to the players after I finish coaching them. And I think that's actually a mistake. I think I should have tried to be a little bit closer to them whilst I was coaching them. Mm. Like, I don't know, reflection. That might be a good or a bad thing, depending on how it goes. But what would you, when you're doing things like review and those types of things, what would you split percentage-wise be, Coops, with like positive and negative?
Depends on the athlete. To be honest, like, and when we're talking about honesty and truth, you know, creating relationships that can bear the weight of truth, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You know, if they had a poor tournament and it was 95% RFIs and 5% goods, then that's what they're getting. And the relationship and the attitude of the athlete is going to determine what comes next. So if we've got a really strong relationship and that athlete is really keen on getting better, they're going to look at that and be like, hey, thanks. And maybe even say something like, can you help me put a plan together? Can we go address those issues? You know, Bessie and I coached a Navy team a couple of years ago that had some guys that were in the stage of trying to find their eliteness in terms of habits and understanding and those sorts of things. And, you know, we worked hard to try and build some relationships, and a lot of them got, you know, some pretty straight feedback. And a lot of those athletes I'm not in touch with anymore. And that's just an example of how it can go sometimes.
Yeah, and it does. I mean, you don't want to burn bridges, so to speak, and lose relationships out of it, but you also can't lie.
Right.
Like, and I mean, you spoke about it before, Bestie. You're like, well, I wasn't watching that, so I'm not going to tell you that. Like, you can't be in that space because it's just going to create a really confusing environment, I feel, for athletes.
That's such a key word in terms of confusion, because you're talking about, you know, we're in a high-performance pathway. It is super cutthroat. And if we're wishy-washy or we're, you know, sending the wrong message, and then all of a sudden, you know, they go to the next state trial or an Oz camp or whatever, and you know, and then they're cut, and they get a clip. It's, you know, very easy for them to come back to us and say, hey, like you said, I was really good and you said I was doing this and so on. And that's, they're obviously the sort of conversations we want to avoid.
Yep. A little bit of Rob story time.
There we go.
This may shock everyone that has ever met me, but, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I took a boxing class just for something a little bit different to do. Like I was looking for something different, drag Zoe along to it, much to her disgust. But during these sessions, like we got some feedback on what we were doing well, what we were struggling with and those types of things. And there were two coaches going around. There was about 9 or 10 people involved. And there were two coaches coming around. One coach walks around, hey, you need to get your elbow up a little more when you're doing this. It's like, yep, cool, no dramas. Like, put that feedback into place. Next coach rolls through, hey, your elbow's too high. You need to have it close to your side. Nothing annoyed me more like than getting two completely conflicting bits of feedback. And I'm sure both of them came from a really good place of trying to help and that sort of stuff, but it annoyed me. And that's that confusion we talk about a little bit. It's like, well, look, if you're going to give feedback, it has to be correct. Don't give something that a player is then expected to action, but then can come undone when another coach comes through. It has to be right feedback. Otherwise, you're better off just giving the generic, hey, good job, work harder, faster, whatever the case may be. But if you are going to give feedback on something specific, be right. And if you're not sure, ask someone else and then get their opinion. And between the two of you, you'll make sure that the elbow is in the right position and you don't end up with an angry Rob that ends up quitting the class because of it. You mentioned it very early on, Bestie, it changes from juniors to seniors and boys to girls feedback. What are the differences you've noticed over the course of who you can give feedback to and how you would deliver it?
Yeah, obviously lots of differences. My experiences with girls, they actually prefer the honesty, I've found. Yep. The big thing is that you've got to then show empathy and then this is how we are going to fix this, or this is how we are going to get better, or how we're going to help you. Boys get a little bit defensive, I've found. And I've spoken about it before. Under 12s, they do what you tell them to do because they don't know any better. Under 14s, they start to understand the why, and that's a really fun age group. Under 16s, they think they know better than you. And then by the time you get to under 18s, those that have hung on are the ones that go, oh, wow, I need to listen to this guy and something could happen. You know, in a snapshot, that's how it's been through my journey. But yeah, I've found the girls much prefer a sit and talk, sit down and talk, as opposed to, you know, just grab them on the sideline during the session. If it's a hard-hitting topic, I know through my time at BTAS, we had to have some discussions around body shape with some females, which is difficult, but really well received because it was done the right way. Boys can be a little bit more, oh no, I do this, or no, I can do that. So you need to come more with specific examples for the boys, I found.
Yeah, one thing I can guarantee you with the female athletes, sarcasm does not work. It is not well received. They do not either understand it, or I'm just not as funny as I think I am either way. But I know from my perspective, I'm exactly the same as you. It's a chat and it's certainly not in front of everyone else. Yeah. And that's the hard part, is trying to manage when you deliver that feedback. Some feedback you will have to give in front of the group because it might be a timeout. You're in the throes of a game and you have to call something out that you may have seen that needs to be adjusted to get the better result for the group. But some of the harder hitting ones, I think the chat on the side is actually a little bit more comforting for them. Mm. Like it's, and that's not necessarily boy, girl, that can be players in general. The ability to shift the narrative from the here and now to something that is coming from a place of comfort and care, I think is probably the big thing with that. It's not so much of you're doing this wrong. It's okay, we got to try and find a solution here. And here's what I'm seeing. What do you feel like the solution could be? Or are you even seeing what I'm seeing? Because there are plenty of times where, as you say, like the boys in particular, it's like, nah, I'm not doing that. It's like, well, you are. The film would suggest you are. Here's how we can go about it. What have you sort of found with this?
What's the goal, though?
Well, and that's, you know, that's
super important. That's
bang on.
What's the goal?
Yep.
And that helps all of it. Sorry to cut you off, Coop.
No, I think you're right, though, because is the goal simply to keep playing the sport? In which case, the feedback can be really, not generic, but it's more about the satisfaction of short-term wins, I suppose, whereas the goal for someone else that really wants to achieve might be, hey, this is going to be a 2 to 3 year process of fixing your shot or fixing your ball handling to a point where it can go up a level, those types of things. So, sorry, Coos, we both cut you off on that one. Apologies.
No, very, very similar. I remember helping with the SEBA women's team out in the Rat, and I think one of the sessions I gave the girls a talking to afterwards, but it was very broad, and like I didn't raise my voice, but I was like, you know, we need to be better. And then I went and approached a few of the girls, you know, individually, and the feedback that came back to me the next day was how much they appreciated that. That it was like, in the past, you know, we'd potentially been, you know, called out in front of the group. That's, you know, we don't like that. And look, it was probably a happy accident at that point, but it was great to know and that they felt comfortable to come up and show me that. And obviously that builds on your guys' experiences. But it's that old adage, you know, it's, you know, shout praise, you know, whisper criticism. But I think there's also a part of, you know, what sort of meetings are we having prior to this? You know, are we getting together and creating an IPP? Are we sitting down and talking about a plan of who you are and where you want to go, so that when we do have feedback discussions, we're actually relating it back to something. We're relating it back to something that, you know, that is tied into this person's journey. You know, I learnt, or just through research, you know, a number of years ago now, about motivational interviewing, which I found such a powerful tool, you know, and sitting down at that, you know, the pre-season part and going through that questionnaire and having the athletes, you know, give you their reasoning, give you their, you know, their why and where they want to go. And so when that first feedback question comes, it's like, okay, well, let's go back to your interview. Where did you say you wanted to go? Oh, you wanted to be a green and gold athlete. You know, you're asking me about, you know, your defensive footwork. Well, let's start at effort. Did you have green and gold effort today? Oh, no. Okay, well, maybe let's address the effort first and then we'll add the footwork once we get up to that level. So just like everything that we're talking about today, I think there's a lot of moving parts that it's really important that we try to address as many of as coaches.
Yep. Bestie, how do you take the emotion out of feedback? Because I suppose in-game situations, it would be fair to say that what usually gets spoken about the most is errors rather than successes. And again, it comes from a good place of wanting to fix the problems from the coaching side of things. But of course, error on error on error usually leads to a fairly irate coach on the sideline. So how do you go about taking the emotion out of delivering a message that may not be a positive message?
Yeah, good one. I think once you say your piece, you then need to move on to what's next, much the same that we ask the athletes to do that. You know, so it might be, well, I had an example of this on the weekend, actually. We were getting just monstered on the glass in our game. So we called a timeout because they had a few, you know, second chance points, and basically challenged them on toughness a little bit and said, look, I don't care if you just spike the thing out of bounds, right? As long as we don't have it, they do. And then it was very quickly into, right, next oh, this is what we're doing. Right, let's move on. And then just another touch point right before we put the hands in. We've spoken about it now. Let's fix it.
Yep. It's difficult to do because you almost got to take a beat. Well, have you found anything that's worked for you, Coops?
More question asking.
Yep.
So again, you know, putting it back on the athlete to try and learn a little bit more about what's happening and potentially find a solution. You know, because I've done it like everybody else, you know, especially as a younger coach, you know, three mistakes in a row, sub, sit him down, finger in the face, you know, and just highlight the three mistakes that, you know, probably with some expletives tucked in there as well. So as we know, that doesn't get you anywhere. So it would be sub, and as I've spoken about in the pod before, like I'm just really big on turning my back to the game, and not that I actively want to miss what's going on the floor. I want the athlete to know that even in a game environment that I can turn and look you in the eye and be there for you. And it's like, hey, talk to me, what's going on out there? You know, hey, remember after those last two mistakes, we spoke about making some change. You know, this was a solution. You know, talk me through it. What's happening? Are you engaged? So, yeah, just trying to dig a little deeper, you know, show them that I'm caring. And at the end of the day, we need a solution anyway, rather than either of us getting upset. So that's been a really helpful tactic for me.
It's been something I talk a lot to coaches about in particular, in that when a sub comes, it's usually because of an error. Like, it's not always a, hey, this is just for a break sub. It tends to be from there, in particular at the senior level. and just giving the players a beat to just kind of collect their thoughts, because if they've just fouled or thrown a turnover, whatever the case may be, they're coming out, they're probably annoyed at themselves anyway. The last thing you want to do is compound that thing by just smashing them on the way past. It's like, you know, you give that crappy low five and it's like, yeah, whatever. Like, and they go down and it's like, yeah, well, this is not going to go well. Like, you got to know that you got to give them a bit of time. And whether it be the head coach that goes and talks to them or an assistant coach that goes and talks to them, like we see it a lot with bench dynamics in particular, that the head coach will usually say to the assistant, go and talk to them about this. And it's the assistant coach's job to, okay, there's a little bit of a buffer now. I can calm them down. I can get to a point where they're going to listen to me and not just be quite so flustered. Like, how do you go about talking players down that are just in their own head when they're coming off the court?
Well, I think just firstly, in knowing the dynamics of a relationship is which assistant you send down there.
Yeah, fair point.
And, you know, what's the relationship between that athlete and that particular assistant, and also knowing what sort of message is going to come. So, you know, if I've got you two guys, obviously I'd send Bestie down for an arm around because he's a teddy bear, but if I wanted a whack or a clip over the ear, I'd send Rob. So
feel victimized, Bestie. Mm.
I deliberately did that because I switched their personalities just to see what they would do. So
I'm fine with it. I'm calm.
Yeah.
Yeah, jeez.
Oh, if only we filmed. If only we filmed.
We've got to start filming.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah, we do. But no, it's about that. It's about, okay, you know, do they need a whack? Do they need an arm around? You know, what's a relationship like? You know, how do you think that's going to go? So I think that's an important part of it too, especially after giving them that chance to cool off. Story time, Rob. I have had the pleasure of coaching James McKinnon, and I'm definitely going to use his voice. So I'm really his name. So I really hope he's listening because we've got a fantastic relationship. But I coach him in under-14s, then I coach him in Siebel and NBL One, and in our most recent season, we changed to a zone, and we had one good possession. Then we had another possession that was actually really good, but we got scored on. And then it might have been the same. I think it was like another possession that was also quite good, but we got scored on. And he turned around, and again, with our relationship, quite with a lot of animation, and again, some language I can't use on this podcast, let me know about what he thought of staying in the zone. So I subbed him out, and I think at this point too, I may have kicked him out of a practice already as well. So
this is under-14s.
No, the
senior one.
Yeah,
just
yeah,
making sure.
Yeah,
Coop's NBL running one, yeah. The zone in under-14.
He's a competitive person.
That's true. And we both walked down the end of the bench together, and we got in a shouting match. It was fantastic. I love this guy. And he walked off around behind the other bench and came back, and we coached away. And again, it wasn't great that we got in a shouting match, but I love the guy. So anytime we're shouting at each other, it's kind of funny. But he came back, I think it was Tuesday, to practice, and he sheepishly walked straight up to me as he walked through the door. He's like, "Hey, coach, I watched the film. You're right. The possessions were good. We should have stayed in the zone." So,
how did you deal with that? Did you give it a, "Yeah, I know"? Or did you give it, "Hey, I really appreciate this"?
No.
How did you deal with that?
We both had a laugh, and the reason that I tell this story is that there was just no need for us to get into a shouting match. Didn't matter that we had a good enough relationship to be shouting at each other. It was not the way to handle it, and we both could have just had a much better discussion about what was happening on the floor, you know, what he was seeing versus what I was seeing, and, you know, being able to keep him out there because he was important to us at the time. So that was definitely me letting my emotions get in the way, and him as well.
Very easy to happen, to be perfectly honest. It's how do you go about dealing with the "yeah, but" people that ask for feedback? Because that's, "Yeah, I've heard you, but this. Like, what would you do in that space, Bestie?
Well, what I do now is I actually recite the story of when I was the "yeah, but". Yep. And it was actually with one of my mentor coaches, Mark Radford. So I was coaching a Nationals for Tassie, and we lost a game, and we sit down afterwards and I ask him for the feedback. He gave me the first point And I fired back straight away. And his response was not verbatim, but somewhere along the lines was, well, do you want the feedback or not? And I tell that story all the time. It's like, you've asked for it, right? This is how it is. So yeah, that's how I deal with it, to be honest. Yep. I say, you know, this is my role. You've asked me for this. If you don't want it, don't ask for it.
Yep.
You know, and it's the same of, you know, often we talk about criticism as well. You know, don't worry about criticism from someone you wouldn't seek advice or feedback from. You know, you shouldn't worry about that. Just touching on the subbing someone out and the communication, probably 3 or 4 times so far.
Oh, hold on. Is this story time?
Not really. Yeah. No.
Spewing. Three or four. Your finger.
Yeah. It went up.
Yeah, I was up for it.
3 or 4 times probably this season, I've been going to get somebody out. And as Coops knows, I tend to run my guys. Like, you know, like, you're playing. You're doing well, stay on the court, right? That's just, you know, and it's a growth area for me for sure. But often it might be that possessional too late, and then it ends up they have a mistake. And often they're thinking they're coming off because of that mistake. And I'm finding myself saying, I'm not coming off because you're not coming off because you turned the ball over. You're coming off anyway. Yeah. You know, and that sometimes diffuses it. Like it was your time for a break. And maybe that helps them then move on. Yeah, so that's been interesting.
It is. And I mean, you've opened the door to the coach feedback one. Do you two both have mentors that you go to for your coaching to get feedback for yourself?
Yes. Like,
yep.
Yes.
Same Coops. How did you start that relationship? So I'll start with you, Coops.
My first mentor, who has been fantastic, and I've spoken about her on the pod before, and you know what she means to me and my journey, Laurie Chiswick. So we first met when she was an assistant coach with the Victoria Titans in the NBL, and you know, I was one of the up and coming superstars on that roster.
Code 4, I got yelled at more than everyone else.
Yeah, pretty much. And we got to know each other there, and it was great. And then she became the head of basketball at Wesley College, which I was really lucky enough to attend as a student. And I was looking for some part-time work and just happened to, I think it was through a mutual friend that said, oh, Laurie's actually the head of basketball at Wesley, you know, why don't you go and coach there? So we got back in touch, and I think it was like a year or two of coaching there and kind of moving up the ranks and really enjoying it. I was like, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. I think this is my calling. And so, I grabbed Laurie one day. I said, hey, can we go like grab a coffee or something and just talk about coaching? She said, yep, absolutely. And I sat down and I said, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do in my life. I think I can be good at it. And, you know, I love impacting young people. And I just said, you know, can you help me? And I laid out some of the things that I wanted to do, some goals, and she was fantastic. She was so open to it and started talking about some opportunities and what she could do to help me. And it's gone from there. And we've both obviously become more busy as we've gotten older and into different jobs. And so now it's probably more of a friendship, but she's still fantastic. I think the last NBL 1 season, I grabbed her and just said, hey, can you please come down? We're playing a practice game against Nutterwadding. Would you mind sitting next to me on the bench and just auditing me as a coach and afterwards? And so she did it, you know, without batting an eyelid, and, you know, went through it with me after the game. Hey, you know, you said this, but your body language did that. You know, you were talking about this point of emphasis, but you didn't really follow up, and it was a great moment. So I think the other one too, just I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, is I'm really big on asking for feedback from whatever coach I'm working with. And, you know, Rob, I bug you all the time. But, you know, like afterwards, like Bestie and I are on floor together for MPP or a state session, I like to do a hot review as much as possible. And especially if I'm with someone like, you know, the caliber of Bestie, like just getting something from him. You know, even if it's just one thing, hey, how did you think I did today? Were my interventions good? Were they too long? What was my language like? I just think is a must. Like, it doesn't matter who you're with. You can learn something from someone. I think you just got to find that humility and find that comfort of, of wanting to hear it.
What about you, Bestie?
Yes, similar to Coops, I've, you know, even in this role, I've had some people that I look up to come to one of our camps to sit on the sideline, take notes, give me feedback. When we talk curriculum, session planning, all of that, without going into actual names, I've probably got three or four. And I think it's important to, when you start to look at people for you in this space, and we've kind of gone off topic a little bit here, but it's great. It's important to know for who you're going to about what. Because, for example, one of my mentor coaches might be really great in one space, but maybe not so great in another space. So don't go to them with the challenges around that not so great space. You know, so it's important to know the strengths of your mentors and for what reasons you would go to them, I think is really important.
No, I think that's really valuable. And it's amazing how many coaches out there do have mentors that they seek feedback from. And just how that relationship first starts is always a really interesting one. Like, does it come from similar to what you're talking about, Coops? Like, it was almost by chance, like, that you just decided to go into it. I mean, Bessie, you've without naming names again, there's a lot of people you've probably worked with that you would still rely on in that workspace to help you in your current role in particular. But I suppose from my end, I do a lot of coaching off coaches anyway. Like, that's coaching courses and the like. And I was listening to a podcast not too long ago with Stephen Rolnick, who's fantastic for anyone that wants to listen to it. And his word of advice for people coaching coaches was, you're better off being a guide on the side than a sage on the stage. It's like, you're not there to be the purveyor of all things right and wrong when you're trying to coach other coaches. Your job is to ask questions, lead them down the path. Did you see this? What happened when this happened over here? How would you do that differently? It's more the open conversation around it, which I find personally is far more valuable. Like, I know for me, I get more out of negative feedback than I do positive. Like, I get super uncomfortable when people say, hey, I liked how you did with that. Not my thing. I'll lose eye contact. I get super fidgety. It's just not for me. But if you give me negative feedback, I will eyeball you to the end of days. And it doesn't come from a place of hatred. It comes from a place of, great, this is what I need to hear. I need to hear this sort of stuff. So it's interesting how people want it. I know I had a coach, we're talking probably 8 months ago now, said, hey, can you sit on my bench? I'm like, yep, no worries. I want feedback after the game. Happy to give it. No problems at all. And we got to the end of the game. To be fair, I think they coached differently because I was there. Like, I got the impression they weren't being natural. They were trying to do more that wasn't in their personality. And their first words to me after the game were, right, let me have it. It's like, well, oh, this has already got negative connotations written all over it, like that I've done something wrong. I need to hear all this sort of stuff. And that's a difficult conversation to then have, because it's like, it comes from a place of, I think, almost fear. Like, you're putting the barriers up straight away. Like, I know I did things wrong and I want to hear those things that are wrong. And it's like, well, actually, like, I kind of liked how you coached, but I don't think you coached for you. I think you were coaching for other people in that space. And that's where it becomes difficult. Like, both of you have held director of coaching roles. How did you go about giving feedback to coaches, Bestie? Like, that, you said that was part of your Friday nights in a lot of cases.
Yeah, definitely. And it was made easier because we had club-wide systems, right? So whenever the discussion was around that, it was really clear and really simple. It was either right or it was wrong. Whereas when it comes to interpersonal communication, body language, all that type of stuff, then it becomes, you know, sort of very subjective. But just coming back to the comment I made earlier around, don't worry about criticism from somebody that you wouldn't seek advice from. If somebody asks you for feedback and you don't have something nice to say, say it. They ask for it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm in this space a little bit. You know, it's like, what do we need to do better? You know, you don't want a yes man. Oh, we're awesome.
Yeah. The wishy-washy feedback.
Don't want that. No.
It doesn't help.
No. So I'm with you. If someone says, you know what, that wasn't good, this needs to be better. We had a moment like that last Wednesday, you know, with our NPP compete sessions, which are really great. You know, our under 16 Metro boys had a practice game scheduled, and true to their form, you know, a venue cancelled on them last minute. So we said, you know what, you can go on the other court. And literally, we get in the car after the session, because Coops and I have tried to not stand in the parking lot for an hour after practice. We're like, you know what? Let's get in the car, call each other because it's like a 35, 40 minute ride
home.
We'll
get home a little earlier than...
Yeah. And the first thing we said was, no good. Like, can't do it. It definitely impacted us. It probably impacted them. We'll never do that again. Yep. You know, so you've got to be able to, you've definitely got to be able to just say it when it's not good. And people will respect you for that. And if they react negatively next time they come to you, you need to, you know, prompt them with that. Well, you know, do you really want to hear it? You know, if not, don't come to me. So your original question was coach feedback.
Yeah, how to deliver it.
Bluntly.
Yeah.
But that's once again through built up expectations at the start, you know, having coach like pre-season coaching meetings, which we did, clear guidelines for what the expectations are, all of that stuff, even your player feedback, you know, parent feedback around playing time and all these types of things. The biggest advice, and I spoke about this on the pod before, the biggest advice I give DOCs is get your processes correct and your handbooks correct and all of that. So then you're consistent. And that, you know, is often your savior. So it's like, oh, Darren's always honest. So then no one's shocked when you say that.
Yeah. That's not what you need. Someone, Bestie was very direct. Yeah, well, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
Like, it's that kind of thing. Coots, how about you? Like, you've been in that role as well. How do you go about delivering feedback to coaches when they ask for it?
Yeah, look, it's the same thing. You do your work prior and it becomes pretty easy. You know, you got your policy and procedures in place. You've got your court time policy. You've got your style of play and system of play document. You've got your coach's handbook. You've got feedback pro formas. You've got, you know, rules and guidelines around when people can ask for feedback. Like if you do the work prior, it becomes pretty easy that you can just sit down and be really direct and just hit people with what needs to be said and what we need to do from it. Something else that I found really worthwhile was trying to create further resources. So I would try and do some coach PD once a month, once every 6 weeks, you know, create a PowerPoint, how to build relationships, how to give feedback, those sorts of things. And again, it's just trying to provide further strategies around, you know, maybe some things that the coaches had come to me with, you know, another time. Oh, hey, how do I build relationships? Okay, well, a few of people have asked me that before. I've given it individual, you know, feedback strategies. How about we address this again on a more macro level with a PowerPoint follow-up?
There's a bit to this. When giving or receiving feedback and advice, do you prefer it to be written or do you prefer that to be face-to-face conversation? Like, is there a preference there on your end?
Kind of depends what it is and how impactful it is. If it's something that's maybe just an affirmation or something I was already key to, just something verbal is pretty easy. But I say that and then I would write it down anyway. You know, I can't preach to athletes enough that, you know, you write something down, you're 25% more likely to remember it. So I do practice what I preach in that instance. But yeah, I like resources. I like Word documents. I like PDFs. I like film. I like tangible things that I can go back to. And I like podcasts. I like, you know, I like going through that stuff. I like being a lifelong learner. I like having things I can go back to. And so, yeah, I would always ask, yeah, can you send that to me in an email? Can you dot point that out? You know, have you got that? Can you send it to me another way? Yeah, I think, and obviously that's a very personal thing.
Yeah, what about you, Bestie? Are you any different?
I don't necessarily have a preference, but if it is a conversation, I would be taking notes.
Yep.
Yeah. So either way, there's some way you can go back and reflect on it.
Yeah, and it's difficult when it's written, I find, because a lot of the context gets lost. Like, how many Twitter threads have you been on where it's just people yelling at each other and it's like, oh, actually, we've got a lot of respect for each other, but you've missed the context of it. So I think I would always write it down, send it through, let them have a read of it, then follow up with a chat afterwards and say, right, is there any ambiguity about what was being said here? Does it all make sense? those types of things.
This is why it's in all capitals.
With 16 exclamation points after it. But it is, it's going to be a little bit different for everyone. Like I know, like I'm a massive fan of infographics in general. Like you put a graphic on something, I will read that thing all day and night. I love taking in information that way. But I think kids are kind of in tune that way as well. They're not going to read a document on what they're doing well. They might read some dot points with it, but if you can pretty it up with some design around it, they're more likely to read it. And I feel like it's sort of similar with coaches. Like I'd probably segment out a lot of things, like here's the things on offense, here's the things on defense, here's the things with just communication in general, those types of ways. I feel like it's a little bit easier to digest.
And this is how we had, I spoke about it before, that we created that program to feed back to the coaches. So it was literally offensive system notes, defensive system notes, timeout management, player substitution management, and then assistant coach engagement. And then the last one was just general. Yeah. So, and we segmented it out that way.
Yep. That's a lot easier to digest, I think, on that end. Have you ever stopped giving feedback to someone where people have asked you for feedback, whether it be a player or a coach, and you're just like, hey, no more, not doing this again?
Yep. Yep. Directly after I fired them as coach.
Probably fair. Time to stop giving feedback. I feel like it's called bullying and harassment if you continue to give them feedback after you fired them. Coops, what about you?
That's good. No, if I haven't fired them, but I will drastically reduce A, the amount, and B, the depth.
Yep. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing how many people ask you for feedback. You give the feedback and you get the yeah, bad, or excuse. And it's like, hey, you probably haven't taken this the right way. And whether that be a player or a coach doesn't really matter. Like there are people that like to ask for feedback so they can say they've asked for feedback and then 100%. Don't want to go and action it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, the beauty is in the action, not the excuse that comes because of the feedback that's happened. And I mean, there are times, I suppose, as a coach too, sometimes you need to be the cheerleader and you stop giving feedback and you start almost rah-rahing and really emphasizing the positive things. Like the scoreboard might tell you that you're down by a bit. The last thing you want to be doing is giving negative feedback in that space because your players probably already feel like crap. The last thing you want to be doing is piling on top of that by just going negative, negative, negative. Like they need some positive. Like there's a clip that we use in our association coaching course, which is of a coach of the Collingwood netball team at the time was having a conversation with one of their players and was giving some very direct feedback at this point. And the player's like, hey, I just need some positive. And the reaction from the coach was, well, once you start doing something positive, I'll start giving you positive reinforcement. And it's like, oh, that's cutting. Like and unfortunately, it was heard by cameras at the time and it became a little bit of a news story. Like, Bestie's smiling. Like, he loves this straight away. But it's one of those things where it's like, well, read your players. Like, sometimes they just do need a positive. But if there are no positives, what can you give them in that space? And I think in that environment, high performance level, because it's obviously a national competition, but it might be more attuned to, I'm sure if you can do A, B, and C, you will see the positive outcome coming out of this. So you can reframe it to a degree where you are going to still get good engagement with the player and you're not just, not belittling is not the right word, but just sort of beating down on the player, because it's tough to find the balance.
Yeah.
First of all, most recently, like very recently, I've been referred to as a teddy bear. So I'm not sure what you're talking about. Go on, Coops.
Watching, most people know it's Sunderland and the 49ers. So, you know, they're the big two. But watching the LA Rams Hard Knocks, I think it was a year or two ago. And I actually remember filming this on the TV, so I got the clip in my phone. And it's the linebackers coaching comes at halftime at the I think they're playing one of their practice games, and he's talking to the guys, and he's just all process driven. And he finishes the talk. It's really short and sharp, and he finishes the talk. He's like, guys, go out there, have fun, fly around, don't be a damn stress case. The mistakes you make, they're on me. We'll fix them at practice on Monday. Enjoy it. And he walks out, and the first thing one of the linebackers does is he turns to one of his teammates. He goes, man, I freaking love that guy. And it's just, and why wouldn't you? Like, he's given you positive reinforcement. Everything he says was post-process driven. He's taken the mistakes. So the mistakes that they make, you know, he's taken responsibility for them, and he's got a plan to fix them when they get back to practice. And I couldn't think of better positive feedback no matter what was happening on in the game than that example.
Well, and you just want to know, I think, as the player, that the coach has got your back.
Yeah.
Like, and
well said.
I know we've all seen it on the All or Nothing series, like Man City. Like, Pep is in there just giving it to the team that had mailed it in against Everton in one of the games. He's like, hey, I'll go out there and defend you to the press. So as like a player straight away, it's like, yeah, I've heard what I needed to hear, but I know that it's not going to be my manager that's going to just pile on me in the press. And ironically enough, it was Mikel Arteta.
Yeah.
That just last week said exactly the same thing in the Arsenal locker room. He's like, hey, we were not where we needed to be. I'll defend you guys, but we were not where we needed to be. And it's that whole in it together thing that just means so much. Like, yeah. you just don't want that division. As much as you don't want to be friends, I know we sort of circle back to where that was, but you need to know that you're all in it together, and it's not a, I'm doing my part, why aren't you doing your part thing. And that's the tough part with feedback and communication, is that sometimes you have to be the deliverer of bad news, but you're there as a team. It's not a me and you separate. It's got to be all in that together.
Yeah, genuine. Both parties have to be adaptable. You know, like the person giving it, the person receiving it.
Yep.
You know, and the longer you're in it with someone or a group, it should only get better. Because you should get closer and become more, you know, in tune with each other and what works and what doesn't work.
Absolutely.
Well, that's that four C's of communication. So it's got to be calm. It's got to be consistent. It's got to be careful. And it's got to be collaborative. Like, so straight away, make sure that you're covering off those four, and you can't really put too many feet wrong if you're at least going along those lines. So it's, I always remember my level one coaching course way back in like 2000, no, it was earlier, 1995, I think it was, when I did my level one. I got told, don't say don't, never say never, and try not to say try. And I think I say all of those in every timeout I ever take. But it is one of those things that has just stuck with me all the way through. And it was more along the lines of, think about the communication you're using with your players. Like, don't tell them not to do so, or you can't do that, or don't do that, because there are times where they may have to do that. Never say never do this, because again, there are times where they will potentially have to do this. Try not to say try, because then it becomes wishy-washy in between. It's like, okay. And this is like way back. Like, we're talking a while ago now, obviously. But I still remember that from a coaching course I went through about the communication side. And it wasn't so much about the drills. It was about how you communicate with your players and how you get them to learn and how you get the buy-in on that side as well. So it's interesting that everyone will have something along those lines that they'll probably just fall back on every now and again to just help out with their coaching. That wraps us up. So thank you both very much for jumping into the pod. Again, we could probably go on for like another 4 hours with this, but we'll cut it short a little bit there. I have appreciated the feedback we've got. Every now and again, I'll get an email from someone asking about a coaching course. It's like, oh, by the way, love the podcast. It's like, yeah, cool. Well, really, I've got to do a better job passing that on to you guys too. So I do apologize. But a lot of feedback in particular around the one that you were both on about directors of coaching, in particular, about people saying, look, we've never looked at it from this perspective. I am a director of coaching, a coaching coordinator. Just really appreciate it. Like, we feel like we're the unsung heroes in all of this because we have to try and appoint coaches and all that sort of stuff. So thank you both for your input into that as well. It's certainly appreciated by plenty of people out there. If you are listening and want to leave a rating and review on iTunes, we'll obviously allow you to do that without any problems at all. If you want to go the 5-star, that's fine. I'd certainly appreciate that. If you are an Arsenal fan and you want to give it one, I understand that too. Well, that's okay. There we go. We'll circle back. But thank you all very much for listening, coaches, and we will catch you all next week on the Talking Split podcast. Tune in and join the tribe.